While Hollywood has dominated the film industry for 100 years, the international movie industry is growing by leaps and bounds. Today, we have Bollywood in India, K-dramas and C-soaps coming out of Asia, and telenovelas from Latin America, just to name a few. But can any of them really compete with Hollywood? I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything, where today we're going to take a look at the cost in various markets to produce and film, and if other movie markets have the potential to overtake Hollywood in the future. It is estimated that in 2021, the motion picture and videos industries in the U.S. totaled $66 billion. Now, the average cost of producing a film can range from a few thousand dollars for low-budget independent films to hundreds of millions of dollars for high-budget Hollywood blockbusters. Now, the standard film budget hinges on a few factors like screenplay, cast, crew, location, special effects, and marketing. Film expenses are usually divided into three main categories: pre-production, production, and post-production. Now, production accounts for a significant portion of the overall budget, often ranging from 30 to 60% of the total cost. This involves expenses related to hiring cast and crew, securing locations, building sets, renting equipment, and other logistical aspects. Post-production is the other most expensive part of film creation, as it includes special effects, editing, sound design, and color grading. And this also depends on the tech film skill and the special effects required. Finally, you have the promotional efforts, where you have advertising and publicity. And this can sometimes match the cost of the actual film itself. Hollywood is famous for its colossal budgets, but the average film budget for an independent movie is significantly lower. For example, Hollywood's Avengers: Infinity War cost approximately $400 million as compared to the other horror film, Get Out, which cost only $4.5 million. Now, both of them achieved massive success, both critically and commercially, but Get Out spent far less on production aspects. Other movie genres that are noticeably low-budget films but a hit in the movie theaters are usually the horror and gory movies like The Blair Witch Project. Today, Hollywood is a huge share of the world entertainment market. More than half of the audiences for many blockbusters hail from outside of the U.S. However, there is growing Asian competition for the film industry. Today, we're joined by filmmaker Sean Stone to explore the glitzy world of movies. Now, Sean, the movie industry is known for its multi-million dollar budgets. Could you provide some insights into what factors contribute to the high cost of producing a film from pre-production to marketing?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's something that I asked producers when I made my first documentary. It was called Fight Against Time. It was about my father making the film Alexander, which was at that time a pretty big budget movie. It was like $170 million or something like that, which is, nowadays, I think, small compared to a lot of the Marvel films and these big epic movies, right? They make them for like $200-250 million and more. So where does the money go? I mean, you think about the amount of people involved in these productions, the amount of crew. You're talking hundreds, if not thousands, of people working for months, because there's the development side of a story, which is a few, let's say it's a fewer number of people, like a few writers. But when you get to that place of designing visual effects, right, art design, costume design, you start talking about hundreds of people developing something for months and then going to work every day, for maybe anywhere from 9 months to sometimes a year and a half. Because nowadays you think about all the visual effects, that's the computer generated imagery that you see in these movies, right? These or TV shows even. And so that requires thousands, at least hundreds of people, sometimes thousands of people working on it and doing everything from, small touch-ups to people's faces, actors' faces, all the way down. So there's a lot of people involved in building, in constructing, in designing, in making a film happen. But most of those people are not making big budgets necessarily, right? They're probably making, maybe a few hundred dollars a day or maybe $1,000 a day. So that's some aspect of the budget. The the bigger numbers tend to go towards the actors, you know, the people that we consider stars, right? The director, the writers, sometimes to a certain extent, maybe not as much, unless they're a really famous writer, and the producers. And then the like this oftentimes, if it's a studio film, then the studio has their, they call overhead, right? That they're basically taking their cut. You know, they're kind of, they're making their money with, you name it, the development side of it, renting out studio spaces, renting out facilities, you name it, renting out equipment. So, you know, again, it's a large process to make a movie. It's not just writing a book, you know, it's one, two, three people, you know, an editor, you know, that kind of thing. It's a very small number. Painting a painting, it's usually one person. Making a movie, you're talking hundreds to thousands of people.
Now, film production involves various expenses, including cast salaries, equipment, location, and special effects. How do these costs vary across different genres? And what steps do studios take to manage and optimize these expenses?
Yeah, so I mean, when it comes to film, I remember that we talk about nowadays the productions of being like the what they used to call like blockbusters, you know, tentpole blockbusters, like the Marvel movies or the Star Wars movies. And those, you now see the budgets around 200 million, and that's just for the production. And then you talk about like the P&A, we didn't even mention that, you know, that's the publicity, the advertising, right? The billboards, the commercial spots, putting it on radio, getting actors, you know, to events around the world, right? Traveling the actors to the different events, all these stuff. That's another 100 million or more just advertising. So that's for the bigger movies. In terms of, let's say, so there's an interesting place where the studios tend to focus more on big stuff because they want, you know, that justifies their budgets. That's they tend to be a little bit safer, you know, because there's a big audience. Although we're seeing this past year, maybe, you know, Indiana Jones and The Flash and Transformers, maybe they don't have the same audience that they used to have, right? And so they're spending $200-300 million, and maybe it's not worth it. I think that's they're having to reassess, right? This is not the old game that it was the last pre-COVID, right? When you just put out a big blockbuster movie and you knew you'd make $500 million to $1 billion. Maybe it's a little bit different now. People are maybe tired of those. So you have, you know, so the studio system got really used to just doing the big budget stuff and then acquiring the more independent projects that you could see, like, you know, like so many examples of smaller films, you know, maybe that don't have as big a budget because they're more contained. They may be like $5, $10 million movies, $20 million movies, right? Dramas usually are in this category, you know, that because they're not going to spend $100 million usually on a drama unless you have a Tom Cruise as a star, you know, because you don't need a big star for a drama. And then horror films also have been very successful traditionally because they tend to be done for like, you know, $2 million to $5 million, maybe $10 million. And they, as we see, traditionally, if they're done well, you can make easily $100 million from a $10 million movie. So that's going to show you a lot more profit. So again, the thing I believe is that the systems are changing. You know, the studio systems stopped, kind of dropped a lot of the smaller projects to focus on the bigger stuff. And I think maybe they're going to have to come back around and say, well, actually, maybe it makes more sense to do the smaller films, the dramas, the horror, the thrillers, the adventures that you don't have to necessarily spend $100, $200 million to make, and we can still make good money.
It seems that marketing and distribution are significant contributors to a film's overall budget. How do these costs impact the success of a movie? And can you discuss any strategies used to maximize returns on marketing investments?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's an interesting question of how, you know, how a film can be successful without marketing. Because, you know, you think about one of the great examples of marketing was like Paranormal Activity, which was a little movie. Remember, that was done for like $30,000 or maybe, I don't know, $70,000 or something, very small. But because Spielberg and I think Paramount got behind it, and they basically marketed it for like $30 million. And what happened, it was a caught fire, right? Because everyone, they saw a great marketing campaign of a fresh, different horror film, and they went to see the movie, and it made, I don't remember how much, 100, 200 million or something or more. That's probably one of the biggest successes of all time. So, because if you think about the cost of production to the actual revenue and net revenue. So as far as, you know, marketing, the question is, can you have a successful film without it? I think the interesting thing is like A Sound of Freedom, which is a movie that came out this past year that was done independently. None of the studios wanted to pick it up and distribute it. Angel Studios, which is an independent studio, new company, basically distributed it. And I don't think they had a big marketing budget. I might be mistaken. But they still, because of word of mouth, because of the sort of the grassroots, you could say, the grassroots audience that had heard about it, was talking about it, wanted to see it. They campaigned basically saying, look, buy a ticket for your friend, you know, help people who can't afford it to go see this movie in the theaters. And it did like $100 million. So you see two different strategies, right? One where you spend a lot of money marketing, getting people to get excited. And often, and then that strategy fails so many times with, like I mentioned, The Flash or the new Transformers or the new Indiana Jones, you know, movies that maybe, you know, they spent $100 million or more marketing it and probably did not do as well as they were expecting.
Hollywood and Bollywood are two of the world's largest film industries. How do production budgets in Hollywood compare to those in Bollywood? And what are the key differences in cost structures between these two giant industries?
So, you know, Bollywood is so interesting to me because it's a bigger, they make more films than Hollywood, if I'm correct. And I think Nigeria even is even bigger. But when they say they make more, doesn't necessarily mean the quality is always as good. That said, I've seen the Bollywood productions have gotten so much better over time that now they have new movies that are coming to Netflix and to Hulu and new TV series that are just the same quality as what you'll find in Hollywood. So I'm sure, you know, again, I don't know Bollywood well enough to say how it compares. I'm sure that their budgets are not as big. Even their big budgets are not as big as, you know, $200 million U.S. productions. But at the same time, you think about how, again, going back to the visual effects, how this is changing, this is evening the whole playing field, right? So if you have visual effects companies that are doing the work for Hollywood, but some of those visual effects companies are based in India or Korea or, you know, other countries, then they're basically, they have the ability to do the same quality of work in those other countries as they are doing in America. And so that's really where I think things are becoming more balanced, because again, in the past, you know, the acting quality is available in any country. You know, people can be good actors. The productions, you know, it may not have it cost as much, but you don't need, you know, it's all relative, right? The cost of labor in India is going to be different than the cost of labor in California. But now with the CGI, this really is changing the nature of how you can make a movie. And so you can do something of very high quality in, you know, in basically any country, if you can generate the imagery, the visual effects imagery and such that that a good Hollywood blockbuster has.
Thank you so much, Sean, but please stick around. Filmmaker Sean Stone will stay with us right here after the break. And when we come back, in recent years, Hollywood has been challenged by other countries as the leader with a thriving film and TV industry. So what countries are shining in this industry? We'll have more after the break.
The West is all in on the side of Israel. It is essentially forbidden to speak of de-escalation and negotiations. At this point, Israel's war aims are unclear. However, if we use history as a guide, there is no military solution to this conflict. It could only be a political resolution.
Alegem calea europeană pentru că alegem pacea. În fața noastră este un drum cu provocări.
Уже дороги нет. Дорога закончилась. Уже тупик. Тупик политический, экономический, социальный, человеческий. Все.
Сегодня Молдова и жители Молдовы – тотальные банкроты. Экономика сегодня лежит на полу.
Но и синте мои часто со скандем Молдова и Европяна.
Жить людям стало хуже. Они просто обманули людей. У них хозяева с Запада. Они ведь все уедут жить на второй день после отставки. Кто в Америку, кто в Румынию, кто в Европу, неважно.
The global film industry could be divided into two broad categories, producers and earners. Historically, Asian countries accounted for most of the movies made worldwide. Four nations, India, China, Japan, and South Korea are among the top five producers along with the US. But the amount of money each market makes out of their productions is completely different. The US is the leading country by overall filmed entertainment revenue, grossing more than China, Japan, the UK, and Germany combined. In 2020, due to the COVID pandemic, China overtook North America as the world's biggest box office, being the first country to achieve this status. Its revenue turnover totaled more than $7 billion. So, in an attempt to protect the burgeoning film industry in China, the Chinese government imposed a quota to allow the screening of a certain number of foreign films each year. Meanwhile, it has also made significant investments into Hollywood, as it has seen how Hollywood films help to sell the American culture to the world. Now, China knows that if it wants to expand its reach and cultural exchange, it needs to be in the form of movies, TV shows, or music. Meanwhile, Japan has a film industry that spans more than 100 years. It has signature genres like anime that has been exported all over the world, jidaigeki period pieces, and cult horror films. While some anime is hand-drawn, computer-assisted animation techniques have become quite common in recent years. Anime often draws influence from manga, light novels, and other cultures. Unlike Western cartoons, anime as a genre isn't marketed towards or even created for children. A show that may have a seemingly simple surface plot oftentimes features a far more complex and deeper storyline and character development. Today, the most likely candidate to challenge Hollywood for the lead is Asia. India and China together boast not only a third of the world's population, but they have a thriving film and television industry. While Hollywood releases about 250 commercial films a year, India alone cranks out 800 to 900 films. India is the largest producer of films in the world and is the second oldest film industry in the world. The Indian film industry is multilingual and the largest in the world in terms of ticket sales, but third largest in terms of revenue, mainly due to having among the lowest ticket prices in the world. The industry is viewed mainly by a vast film-going Indian public, although these films have been gaining increasing popularity in the rest of the world, notably in countries with a large number of Indian expats. Films like Dangal have overseas gross revenue of $260 million, while the Bahubali series grossed over $370 million globally. So for this and more, let's bring in again filmmaker Sean Stone. Now, Sean, in recent years, Chinese companies have made significant investments into Hollywood studios and production companies. How do these acquisitions impact the global film industry, and what motivations are driving these investments?
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, there was definitely a point where it seemed like the money was going to be coming from China into California, not just into the film companies like AMC, I believe was I think it was Wanda that got a controlling interest in AMC, and obviously in California in general, there was a lot of money coming from China. But actually, a lot of that seems to have changed. I don't know if the Chinese economy has hit some problems because of the COVID era, and the actual, like, I understand right now China's real estate market is hitting some real problems, and their financial system is having problems, kind of like the U.S. banking system. So I don't see China necessarily driving the force of film investment. And in fact, I wonder if the overall attitude that I was told basically within Hollywood was they're already having some financial issues. They were already looking to cost cut before the strike. So in a sense, the strike serves. That's why they haven't made a deal yet. The studio have not made a deal with the writers, because I think the studios wanted to cut costs anyway. And so they're trying to figure out their financial system going forward. So right now it's like a huge pause in this is a massive stop of production, production really. I mean, on the mass, going, over 3 months now without writers working, without SAG, actors working on big projects. Maybe some smaller things are happening, but it goes to show that there's some quandaries about, like, where is Hollywood getting its money going forward, and trying to really make the most sense of how sustainable this economic system is, when the old model of the box office is not necessarily as stable. So the streaming, the idea of making money from streaming is, it's pretty steady for studios, right? They have a pretty steady income from streaming, because they know how many subscribers they have, on a month-to-month basis. But when it comes to then making the filmmakers and storytellers happy, that's been the hard part, because that's a major aspect of what they're striking about, is to say, in the old days you could get royalties from TV and whatever, video and other rerun cycles. Nowadays, you're not getting that back royalty from your production. So oftentimes you're just looking to, make a film at a certain price and make maybe a little profit on it. And so maybe it doesn't have the windfall profits that people used to see from film. So again, I don't know going forward how China is going to play into the U.S. Film production process. I think China's got its own issues to worry about right now. And I think, just in general, we're all looking to see where is the film industry going as far as Hollywood is concerned, because I think the global market is still going, and obviously foreign countries are still producing and making movies, no problem.
What unique characteristics distinguish China's film industry from Hollywood and Bollywood in terms of production practices, storytelling, and cost considerations?
Yeah, I mean, it's unclear to me, how the Chinese system works. I think their biggest problem with China is censorship, as far as what I've observed over time, is that... I think India has some more, some censorship around morality, sure. Like, I don't think they show nudity or, certain, like, vulgarity, right? They tend to be pretty tame when it comes to these kind of things. But China's censorship tends to be around content, right? Things you can't talk about. You can't talk about spirituality, basically. You can't talk about, ghosts and spirits and, things like this when they're producing their movies. There's also nationalism in Chinese cinema, right? As far as, like, they want to sell their country and make it look good. But, if you censor history, or you don't want to talk about the Cultural Revolution and, the problems of communism or whatever, right? Then you're stifling freedom of creativity. So for me, that's still a problem when it comes to the Chinese production process. They don't have the independent cinema that is so vital for a country to create, for creative people. You have to have dialogue, and when you have censorship, it doesn't work for creativity. Creativity has to be willing to push the boundaries, right? To expand people's consciousness, to see from different perspectives and challenge things. So that same problem of censorship, by the way, is in ways come to America. It's not written maybe the same way. It's not so written, but it's unwritten, right? These ideas, or even sometimes it is written, the censorship, like you can't get an Oscar now unless half your cast and crew is a minority or something, right? I mean, how crazy is this? This is like a Chinese system of censorship, truly, because you're no longer making it about the creative process and the product. It's about how it appears, right? It's about superficial. So it's like you're following the Communist Party dictates of who can show up on the movie or not. That's not a healthy thing for Hollywood to be facing, is that kind of censorship. And I think it applies to other aspects of Hollywood's culture, as far as this so-called woke concept, right? It's it's limiting of the creative experience, because it becomes too self-conscious. When you become too self-conscious, you can no longer be creative. You're a performer, basically. You're just there to perform, but you're not there to actually be genuine and to be real. So I think Hollywood is hitting that problem. India, has some of that, as I mentioned, they have some censorship, but I don't know as far as that industry. I think it's hopefully expanding with more independent production, again, just because of the nature of digital cinema and everything that's going on, the revolution of digital. They're going to have more independent voices, I'm sure, that will challenge the status quo. And you think about some of the countries that have had the best quality of production consistently of the last maybe two decades, it's like South Korea. And I think that has to do with their freedom, the freedom of the artists to tell stories that are provocative and edgy. And they're very unconventional, the way South Koreans tell their stories.
Is the film industry still a money-making machine, or are we just repeating stories?
Yeah, because movies will continue to make money. Oh, by the way, one other thing I should mention is that Hollywood also, because the English language is such a unifying language, that's also been able to help transcend the cultural differences, right? So if you're in Europe and you have an Italian and a Portuguese and a Spanish and a French, right? English is the common language that everyone can connect through. So that's also helped for Hollywood to have such a global impact. And it will, movies will make money just the same way that any commodity, anything that people want, there's going to be a value to it, right? So whether people are going to pay at a box office, or they're paying for a Netflix, or they're just getting a free streaming app that, gives them commercial breaks, right? Like television. There's always ways of making money, because I think people want stories. So as long as you want a good story and you not just want to watch a TikTok video or a streaming TV show, you're going to want to see a movie.
Thank you so much, Sean Stone, for all your time today. Today, we live in an era where we consume a lot of content. Media plays a huge role in the progression of globalization, and the film industry is especially unique in its ability to reach an international audience. Globalization is now helping the proliferation of foreign films, thus creating competition for the Hollywood industry. Today, the increasing Asianization of the film business could represent globalization at its best. It exposes a broader sector of the U.S. audience to divergent culture and political perspectives, and could provide enormous value. Rather than experiencing a clash of civilizations and cultures, we would get a truly cosmopolitan world of entertainment media. I'm Christy Ai. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you right back here next time on The Cost of Everything.